disclaimer. The following broadcast gives a true and honest account of the events described, and all evidence and details herein are solely factual. What you are about to hear is real and may disturb you. Caution is strongly advised. Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
If you enjoy our show and find our research interesting, please consider supporting us. Head on over to www.co-fi.com/deadsouls and donate a few bucks to our research and investigations. We truly appreciate all your support and you helping us out. For show updates, you can also find us over on Instagram. Just search Dead Souls Podcast and we'll come up. This is MJ-12, The Evidence. On Tuesday, November the 8th, 2011, Senior Science and Technology Policy Advisor to the White House, Phil Larson, issued a statement on behalf of President Barack Obama. The statement was in response to two Change.org petitions which had gathered over 17,000 signatures. The petitions called on the United States government to disclose any knowledge they have of extraterrestrial beings and contact they have had with them. This was a conclusive and powerful statement from Obama's White House, and it was the first time since 1947 that the executive branch of the US government had issued a formal position on the issue of extraterrestrials and UAPs. The statement read as so.
The United States government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet, or that any extraterrestrial presence has contacted or engaged with any member of the human race. In addition, there is no credible information to suggest that any evidence is being hidden from the public's eye.
A fairly standard, uneventful, and colorless statement. But let's jump back 18 years. When Bill Clinton took office as president in 1993, he immediately asked questions about UAPs, just like President Jimmy Carter had done back in 1977 before him. Attorney General Webster Hubbell, a close associate of President Clinton, was asked by Clinton to find out all he could about two specific things. Number one, who killed John F. Kennedy? And number two, are there UFOs? The president was entirely serious. As Hubbell explained in his biography, Friends in High Places, he eventually reported back to President Clinton that after being stonewalled by multiple agencies, he could not get an answer to either the JFK or UFO questions. Hubbell went on, "I had looked into both, but wasn't satisfied with the answers that I was getting." President Clinton also had aides research into Area 51 to make sure that there was no alien down there, as he put it. He also pushed for the General Accountant Office's 1995 review of all the Roswell papers, which reported back to the president that the Roswell records had been destroyed accidentally and without authority. It is telling how overt both Clintons have been on the UAP issue. It seemed not even the President of the United States, the person who holds the highest office in the country, could get information or access to knowledge. If the president couldn't, then who could? As a minor codicil, a number of assertions have arisen online and amongst ufologists who claim to have evidence that Webster Hubbell allegedly discovered a secret government program that was working on UFO secrets, a program that was above even the president himself. Hubbell did not include this information in his book, and he has appeared guarded and evasive in media interviews that has also brought this up ever since. Hubbell now avoids questions and interviews which discusses this subject and refuses to elaborate further on just what inquiries and research that he conducted for President Clinton. Now, Hubbell is a controversial figure in American politics. He was embroiled in the Whitewater scandal and subsequently left office after being indicted and convicted for tax fraud and was thus sentenced to 21 months in prison. What is now known and confirmed and on record is that on entering the White House in 1993, both Bill and Hillary Clinton voiced a strong interest in unidentified aerial phenomena and showed focus on revealing what information the government held on the topic to the general public. after lobbying from billionaire businessman and UFO enthusiast Lawrence Rockefeller, President Clinton ordered his CIA director, James Woolsey, to release more files on the subject. 2 years later, in 1995, a photograph of Hillary Clinton and Rockefeller shows her carrying the book Are We Alone by Professor Paul Davis. Rockefeller, a longtime advocate for full UFO disclosure, had given the book to Hillary as a gift. This subject doesn't seem to have ever left the Clinton scope of interest either. John Podesta, the chairman of Hillary's 2016 presidential campaign, and who also served as both an assistant to President Bill Clinton and as deputy chief of staff within his administration. Well, Podesta is described as a longtime advocate for government disclosure of UFO files to those that know him or have worked alongside him. Podesta has publicly supported a number of petitions by UFO researchers who claim to have evidence that unidentified aerial phenomena is alien spacecraft, and further have called on authorities to release all files that they hold related to the subject. At a news conference in 2002, Podesta stated that it is time for the government to declassify records that are more than 25 years old and to provide scientists with data that will assist in determining the real nature of this phenomenon. The conference was organized by the National Freedom of Information Coalition, whose goal it is to set about clarity and guaranteeing the people right for government transparency and openness. Podesta also wrote the foreword for a book by Leslie Keene titled UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. The book details numerous contact events by military-trained personnel and government officials. I find it interesting that presidents are deemed off-limits to classified information about UAPs. I also find it quite interesting that a well-connected man who has worked at the highest level of government, as Podesta has to publicly campaign to gain support for them to release what they know. That's a big them. A them in inverted commas. What do you think? I'd love to hear your thoughts if you'd like to DM me. At the time of recording this episode, Podesta is a senior advisor to President Joe Biden for clean energy, innovation, and implementation. So once again, he sits at the top of government. On October the 6th, 2016, WikiLeaks published some 20,000 emails which had been hacked from Podesta's private email by Russian intelligence group Fancy Bear. Amongst Podesta's emails was communication from punk rock guitarist Tom DeLonge. In 2015, DeLonge wrote to Podesta saying he wanted to introduce him to two quote-unquote very important people to discuss their shared interest. I think you will find them very interesting, as they were principal leadership relating to our sensitive topic, DeLonge wrote. Both were in charge of most fragile divisions, as it relates to classified science and Department of Defense topics. In other words, these are A-level officials, worth our time, and as well the investment to bring all the way out to you, DeLonge continued. You'll be aware that it was around this time that DeLonge was investing great time and money into his fascination with UAPs and would eventually use his government, military and scientific contacts to set up To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences in 2017. In another email to Podesta, DeLonge states that he has been in touch with a former official involved in the Roswell incident, in which, it is claimed, the US government covered up its recovery of an alien ship in New Mexico in 1947. The government said it was a weather balloon. DeLonge said he had been in discussions with Major General William McCasland, who had a long career in the United States Air Force, specializing in matters pertaining to space. He mentioned he's a skeptic, but he's not. He just has to say that out loud, but he is very, very aware, as he was in charge of all that stuff, DeLonge wrote. When Roswell crashed, they shipped it to the laboratory at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. General McCasland was in charge of that exact laboratory up to a couple of years ago. DeLonge has an eager tone to these emails. It is unclear whether Podesta replied to the emails. However, his inbox contained an acceptance of an invitation to an event called DeLong/Podesta Meeting. The acceptance came from Susan McCasland Wilkerson, who appears to be a former astronaut candidate. She is also the wife to one Major General William McCasland. Maybe it was a coincidence. To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences is an interesting one. The company, founded in 27 by Tom DeLong, an ex-Stanford Research Institute parapsychologist and electrical engineer, Harold Puthoff. It is composed of aerospace, science, and entertainment divisions. Upon the company's launch, DeLong made some bold claims. DeLong stated that the United States already knew the secrets of free energy, or zero-point energy. 1 inch of air could power the United States for hundreds of years, he said. In addition to this, DeLong also claimed that To the Stars Academy expected to soon build a working anti-gravity craft. Something that as recently as July 2020, DeLong tweeted that he had already begun working on its build. This is literally the holy grail of modern aerospace, something we know numerous United States corporations funded in the 1950s and 1960s, but with no apparent result. Let's be incredibly honest here. Any breakthrough in anti-gravity technology or free energy would be a historic and significant scientific discovery. It would bring huge wealth to any investors and make the person who discovered it an overnight celebrity. So are DeLong's claims realistic? How credible are his claims? The company's aerospace division is dedicated to finding revolutionary breakthroughs in propulsion, energy, and communications. This is a quote lifted from To the Stars 2019 Literate to Prospective Invites. So if anti-gravity is real, then without a doubt the world changes overnight. It's no small boast that Tom DeLong is making. And he's making these claims because he has, by his own admission, acquired advanced technology samples, liaised with a number of government and military agencies, and with his skilled boat of experts, teamed together to create the next step in science. I know, it all sounds like pure bullshit. DeLong has gone so far as to publicly announce that To the Stars Academy aims to be able to demonstrate a propulsion breakthrough within 4 years. This was quoted in 2019. But the Blink 182 frontman went even further and promised a definite propulsion prototype within 8 years, guaranteed. "We think we will be able to demonstrate something pretty kick-ass," he said. One big-name aerospace company is offering its material sciences division to us, DeLong added. Now, DeLong isn't an educated man. He never attended college and was an average C-grade student in high school. His teachers at Poway High School in San Diego County, California, stated that at best DeLong was an average to poor student with little interest to his studies. Now, I'm far from a Tom DeLong detractor. Hell, everyone owns a copy of Enema of the State, right? And I mean this with no disparaging tone. My point is simply this. How does a very, very average citizen become someone who has access to data and secrets that the president cannot get access to? How is he the head of a team who will create possibly the world's biggest scientific breakthrough? And more importantly, if you believe anything that Tom DeLong tells us, why is he in this position? We'll come back to these questions in a short while. Majestic 12. Majestic 12, abbreviated as MJ-12, is allegedly a clandestine organization that within the United States government, but would outside the range of disclosure, record, and public scrutiny. It is referenced commonly amongst UFO conspiracy research. The organization, or syndicate, is made up of an alleged secret committee of 12 senior scientists, military leaders, and government officials, which was created in 1947 by United States President Harry Truman by executive order. The syndicate was placed into existence to facilitate recovery and the investigation of extraterrestrial spacecraft, contact with beings from outside our world, and to manage any earthly incident or visitation. The existence of the Syndicate emerged in 1984, following the leak of a series of government documents titled and numbered as so. Majestic 12-65-81170-22 pages. The leak was taken extremely seriously by the United States government, who ordered the leak to be investigated by the FBI. Upon examination, the Federal Bureau of Investigation declared the documents to be completely bogus and simply an elaborate hoax. But in December 1984, Jamie Shandera, a Hollywood movie producer and UFO researcher, received an unsolicited package through the mail. Inside the plain brown manila envelope was a roll of undeveloped 35mm black and white film. There was no accompanying letter or return address. Only information from the item was the postmark, which showed that it had come from Albuquerque in New Mexico. Shandera had the film developed, and he found that the film contained what appeared to be image files of an 8-page briefing paper prepared on the 18th of November 1952 for President-elect Dwight D. Eisenhower. The first page contained a sole warning which read, "This is a top-secret, eyes-only document, containing compartmentalized information essential to the national security of the United States." The second page was a list of 12 influential U.S. scientists, military leaders, and intelligence advisors. It was page 3 that made sense of the document, and it became clear to Shandera. Page 3 detailed the recovery of a crashed flying saucer and alien bodies near Roswell, New Mexico in July 1947. The names within the document made sense. The style and structure of the document was accurate. The dates within the document were precise. The abbreviations, codes, military acronyms, and governmental elisions were all exact. Given the detail in the documents, pulling off such a hoax was a forensic achievement of no small feat, because faking such a cache of documents while citing real names, titles, offices, and events was a formidably complex task. No other known hoaxes have even come close to this level of authenticity and accuracy. The final page of the documents was a memorandum dated the 24th of September 1947 from President Harry Truman to his Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal. In the memorandum, Truman instructs Forrestal to proceed with Operation Majestic 12, but gives no hint at what exactly that might be. On its own, the Forrestal memo seems meaningless, but when read alongside the 1952 briefing paper, the story behind them became clear, and that was that in July 1947, a disc-shaped aircraft crashed in the area close to Roswell, New Mexico, and extraterrestrial biological entities, or EBEs, were recovered by the military. When President Truman was informed about the crash, he authorized Defense Secretary Forrestal to set up a committee to investigate and deal with the situation. In 1952, when Eisenhower became president-elect, he is briefed on Operation Majestic 12. The briefing paper lists the 12-man group and gives details of the crashed anomalous aircraft. The final paragraph stresses the need to avoid public panic at all costs, confirming that the government is withholding the truth about UFOs from the public domain. Further documents emerged in 1996. Again via leak, that made up the full 22-page Majestic 12 transcript. So are the MJ-12 documents real? Well, the UFO community is split. Renowned UFO researcher Stanton T. Friedman, who has dedicated over 10 years of research to MJ-12, along with fellow ufologists Bill Moore and Jamie Shandera, all believe the documents are entirely genuine. However, UFO researchers Kevin Randall, Armen Victorian and Philip Klass are all firm believers in this document being a fake. To add to the mystery, a memo was discovered at the US National Archives in 1995. Moore and Shandera, as they always did when the National Archives released new troves of records, researched and documented what was newly available to the public. Within the 95 release, the pair found a memo confirming the existence of MJ-12 written by Eisenhower's Special Assistant for National Security, Robert Cutler. Dubbed the Cutler-Twining Memo, it lent legitimacy to MJ-12, given how it was a completely separate document found amongst classified material in the National Archives, which also referenced the Shady Group. Critics have added that whilst it doesn't completely legitimize the MJ-12 existence, it would have to mean, at the very least, that if the documents were fake, then the hoax would have to be perpetuated at a very senior government level. Now, the alleged members of the MJ-12 committee were Lloyd Berkner, a physicist and engineer. He was scientific advisor to President Eisenhower. Berkner died on the 4th of June, 1967. Second is Detlev Bronk, a prominent US scientist who established biophysics in the United States. He was president of Johns Hopkins and Rockefeller University and the National Academy of Sciences. Bronk died on the 15th of November, 1975. Third up is Vannevar Bush. He's the rock star of the group. He was an engineer who headed the Office of Scientific Research and Development. He oversaw the development of radar and the implementation of the Manhattan Project. He was on the board of the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, chairman of the National Defense Research Committee, science advisor to President Roosevelt, and the creator of the National Science Foundation. He is no relation to President Bush, George H.W. Bush, or George Bush Jr. Vannevar Bush died on the 20th of June, 1974. Next up is James Forrestal, the first United States Secretary of Defense. Forrestal implemented racial integration of the armed forces. He was the first Secretary of Defense to initiate a U.S. defense budget based on military threat. He was a key player in the creation of the National Military Establishment, a structure which evolved into the military-industrial complex. Forrestal died on the 22nd of May, 1949. Next we have Gordon Gray, an attorney and government official serving under President Eisenhower and President Truman. He was head for the Office of Defense Mobilization, National Security Advisor to President Eisenhower, was part of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board under JFK, Johnson, Nixon, and Ford. Gray was the second U.S. Secretary of the Army and died on the 26th of November, 1982. Next up we have Roscoe H. Hillencotter. He was Vice Admiral of the United States Navy throughout World War II and the Korean War. He was the third director of the post-World War II United States Central Intelligence Group, the third director of Central Intelligence, and the first director of the Central Intelligence Agency created by the National Security Act in 1947. Hillencotter died on the 18th of June, 1982. Next up we have Jerome Clark Hunsaker, an engineer and a pioneer in aeronautical research. He was chairman of the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, a key player in the department and history of aeronautical design and engineering. He died on the 10th of September, 1984. Next is Donald H. Menzel. He served on the board for the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, the American Philosophical Society, and the United States National Academy of Sciences. He is one of the first theoretical astronomers and astrophysicists in the United States. He discovered the physical properties of the solar chromosphere, the chemistry of stars, the atmosphere of Mars, and the nature of gaseous nebulae. Menzel died on the 14th of December, 1976. Next is Robert M. Montague, who served as the head of plans, operations, and training for the United States European Command. He was Lieutenant General in the United States Army, Deputy Commander of Fort Bliss, Texas, and Commander of the Sandia Missile Base in New Mexico, and he was head of the United States Caribbean Command. He died on the 20th of February, 1958. Next up is Sidney Sowers. he was a United States Navy Admiral, Director of Central Intelligence, Executive Secretary on the National Security Council, and Social Consultant to the President on Military and Foreign Affairs. It was from Sowers that Truman learned of the existence of the hydrogen bomb. Sowers then coordinated the work being done by different departments in the United States government's debate whether to go forward with the development of the weapon. Sowers died on the 14th of January, 1973. Next up is Nathan F. Twining. He was United States Air Force General, the Chief of Staff of the United States Air Force from 1953 until 1957. The third chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he developed the nuclear triad and the single integrated operational plan. He has more military medals and awards than you can count and imagine. This guy's a military icon. He died on the 29th of March, 1982. And finally, we have Hoyt Vandenberg, a United States Air Force General, second Chief of Staff of the Air Force, and Director of Central Intelligence. Vandenberg died on the 2nd of April, 1954. These 12 named individuals certainly were some of, if not the most powerful men and decision makers in the United States when the MJ-12 documents were created. With the so-called exception of elected individuals, of course. But if history and eyewitness accounts tell us, the true handlers and managers of the extraterrestrial question goes above presidential knowledge and control, and fell at the feet of these men. What if MJ-12 are this very group, a cross-presidential syndicate that would allow generational consistency and thorough oversight of one of the biggest scientific issues in our history? Am I defending it? No way. But I'm trying to understand the thought process behind its creation and implementation. I'm trying to place myself in the decision-maker's shoes, and this seems like logical sense, if somewhat misguided and sinister. Sinister because the knowledge of life outside our planet is something that every citizen on Earth should share, and any technology given, lent, or discovered from extraterrestrial friends should be utilized for the greater good of the general public devoid of borders. It should not be gatekept by the military-industrial complex of one nation who choose to weaponize such technology for their own nefarious needs or to maintain a stronghold over others. Richard Doty, a retired special agent with the United States Air Force Office of Special Investigations, told filmmaker Linda Moulton Howe in 2012 that the MJ-12 story was very, very true. And he showed how a number of unspecified documents purporting to prove the existence of small grey humanoid aliens originating from the Zeta Reticuli star system. Now take from that what you want, especially given Doty's reputations as a known US Air Force disinformation agent. For further reference, see the case of Paul Benowitz. Interestingly, in 2016, Brian Dunning, a skeptical writer and host of the Skeptoid podcast, conducted an investigation into the history of MJ-12. Dunning referenced Bill Moore's initial suspicion that instead of MJ-12 being a hoax perpetuated by the UFO community, the documents, he felt, were actually part of a United States government disinformation campaign, the purpose of which was to deflect attention from secret US Air Force projects. Given how accurate and exact the documents were, that theory is considered as a strong likelihood, as the documents being genuine. To add further fuel to the already convoluted fire, ufologists and others active in the UAP community have fiercely debated the subject for over 30 years, and no general conclusion or consensus has been able to be reached. Bill Moore has been accused of taking part in a high-level elaborate hoax, while opposing ufologists and debunkers, much like Philip J. Klass, have been accused of being disinformation agents. In 1995, the FBI began its own investigation into the MJ-12 documents, and quickly published doubts as to their authenticity. The following is the official United States government stance on the subject, supported by the Federal Bureau of Investigation Research.
The United States Government Accountability Office, published July 28, 1995. Document 940692, outcome. Pursuant to a congressional request, GAO examined the agency's views on the authenticity of Majestic 12, allegedly a classified government document explaining the crash of a disc-shaped aircraft near Roswell, New Mexico, in July 1947. GAO noted that 1. The Information Security Oversight Office, the Air Force, and the National Archives stated that their knowledge of Majestic 12 was limited to written material submitted to them by non-governmental persons. 2. There was no evidence that the material constituted actual documents which originated in the executive branch. 3. Although archivists at federal libraries found nothing that fit the description of Majestic 12 or any references to it, they have received public inquiries about this material for years. 4. The Air Force determined that a 1980 message, which contained the words MJ-12, was a forgery.
It's easy to understand why the government denounced MJ-12. If they were real, they certainly wouldn't want that stain on their conscience. They would also need to ensure its secrecy in order to operate as it had been. If MJ-12 was fake, however, then again the government would want to ensure that they distance themselves from it, but also rule out a public disinfo op. Deny, deny, denial. Standard. Unfortunately, it's almost impossible now to ascertain the authenticity of the MJ-12 documents given the level of US government disinformation and reverse disinformation surrounding the documents and subject. Additionally, the work of researcher Mark Pilkington, published in his book Mirage Men, shows us that throughout the 1990s and possibly longer, the United States government and various departments of the military engaged in substantial water muddying through their propaganda, disinformation, and fake news operations. There is every reason to believe that programs like To the Stars Academy is simply another modern-day operation that even Tom DeLonge is not even privy that he is part of. The Disclosure Project. Dr. Stephen Greer is a former emergency room physician turned ufologist, and in 1990, he became the founder of the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, primarily a lobby group. His reputation splits the UFO community, with some finding him the real deal, whilst others considering him a grifter, mainly due to claims he has made in some of his recent documentaries. In 1992, Greer created what he named the Disclosure Project, the aim of which was to advocate for the release of UAP secrets which were hidden within the United States government and in aerospace corporations, Greer and his group believe. Dr. Greer has personally had the privilege of briefing United States presidents, plural, and a CIA director about his research into the UFO phenomenon. Dr. Greer has documented on his website, aetherius.org, that he took part in a meeting in 1993 with then-director of the CIA, James Woolsey. The meeting discussed the UFO phenomenon and the government cover-up and what he knows. Woolsey was prepared to investigate claims of a UAP cover-up following the meeting, although he denies that the meeting was a briefing, rather a discussion at a dinner party. But he does not deny that the meeting took place, nor what was discussed. Interestingly, the host of the dinner party where this meeting took place was renowned futurist John L. Peterson, so the evidence and credibility of this meet is significant. It's significant because we know that Peterson, a former Navy flight officer and well-decorated veteran of Vietnam and Gulf Wars, chairs the Arlington Institute think tank. It's an organization that invites commentators on global futures and national security issues. Peterson has also worked on a number of presidential campaigns and was himself twice second-place choice for the job of Secretary of the United States Navy. In addition, Greer was also personal friends with Edgar Mitchell. That's right, Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell. Mitchell piloted the lunar module on the 5th of February 1971 and was the sixth man to walk on the moon, so his reputation and name could certainly open doors and get people to engage with Greer. Well, it did just that in April 1997, when Mitchell's renown, opened the way for Greer to conduct a meeting with the Deputy Director of Intelligence for the United States Military's Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Thomas Wilson. Greer went into the Pentagon on the 10th of April 1997 with fellow Disclosure Group activists Edgar Mitchell and ex-military servicemen. In addition, as part of the Greer delegation, was retired U.S. Naval Lieutenant Commander Willard Miller. Miller had served on the operations staff of the U.S. Atlantic Command and also NORAD Space Command. Miller had also previously served as a Navy reservist on Admiral Wilson's staff. Admiral Wilson had agreed to be briefed regarding UAP phenomena by Greer and Miller because Miller stated that he had been denied knowledge of the big secret in the past. Prior to their meeting, Greer set the trap, so to speak. He sent, via fax, Admiral Wilson's staff a leaked United States National Reconnaissance Office document. The document detailed a series of genuine code names for special access programs that were the highest level of top secret. The document listed code names for a series of command locations within the Nellis Air Force Range. Sites such as Area 51, Groom Lake, S4, Homi Airport, and Papoose Lake. So to clarify how SAPs, or Special Access Program Security Protocols, work, and to understand why Greer sending the leaked document to Admiral Wilson had so much weight, well, black budget projects are hidden deep. It is a serious crime for anyone to reveal their existence, or attempt to even gain knowledge of them. There are 11 special access programs where the United States Department of Defense buries all of its super secret black budget classified projects. In addition to the highest level of top security, security classification, a program designated special access of SAP means the project is compartmentalized. It is deemed a sensitive compartmented information, or SCI, and designated a code name. Even the most senior military officials with the highest levels of security clearance are unable to know all of the details behind a SAP or SCI code name, even when they are read into them. The thought process behind the compartmentalization is so that no one knows all of the details of a special access program, making it more difficult to get compromised. In addition, there are also USAPs, or Unacknowledged Special Access Programs. This means that the project's entire existence must be denied by those who have knowledge about them. The funding of these projects is hidden and buried so deep, it's undiscoverable to wandering or investigative eyes. Believe it or not, there's an even higher security designation. This is for the darkest, blackest, highest, most top-secret classified programs of all. These are deemed Waived Unacknowledged Special Access Programs, or WUSAPs. They are significant and unique in that the U.S. Secretary of Defense only has waived all oversight laws and reporting procedures. Its very existence is concealed to the point of deletion. The only people who have access are the so-called Gang of Eight in Congress. Remember this term. The Gang of Eight are the chair and vice chair of the House Intelligence Armed Services Committee, the Senate Majority and Minority Leaders, the Secretary of Defense, and three additional group members unknown, who are in place solely to view WUSAPs. Anyway, back to the point. The document that Greer sent to Admiral Wilson's staff angered Wilson. It angered him because there were SAP code names within the document that had not been made known to Wilson, the second most powerful man in defense intelligence. How was that even possible? At the meeting, Greer stated that Admiral Wilson actually recognized one of the code names within the Greer document and disclosed that it was being run by an outsourced governmental contractor. In the same meeting, Admiral Wilson called the contractor on the telephone with Greer and his team present and demanded to be read into the SAP program cited in the Greer document. The second most senior man in United States Defense Intelligence, as I previously stated, was told verbatim, "Sir, You do not have a need to know. This is the guy who is supposed to give the intelligence briefings for the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States. He was told, you don't have a need to know. This meeting is fairly staggering for making this information known to the public. But there's more. Also in the meeting, Greer, Willard Miller, and Edgar Mitchell presented Admiral Wilson with strong witness evidence from multiple military and scientific sources to support evidence that the United States government was concealing extraterrestrial visitations to Earth, recovered off-planet spacecraft, and extraterrestrial biological bodies. They also had evidence and reason to believe that programs within the government Black World were working on incredible technological breakthroughs derived from these historic discoveries. Greer and his team stated that Wilson took on board their briefing and treated the claims very seriously. Edgar Mitchell has also confirmed on numerous occasions that Greer's account of the meeting was entirely true. Further, Naval Commander Willard Miller also supported Greer's account of the meeting, and especially Admiral Wilson's annoyance about being bypassed regarding the SAP program he wanted to be read into. Commander Miller also confirmed, along with Mitchell and Greer, that at the end of the meeting, and this is where the story comes full circle, an aide to Admiral Wilson stated that the long-held conspiracy theory of Majestic 12, or MJ-12, was actually entirely real. Admiral Wilson supported his aide's statement and confirmed this fact. In conclusion, the President of the United States is an elected front, if you will, for the United States government. He might only be in office for a period of 4 years. Also, just because the public has voted him into office does not necessarily mean he is of a strong moral character, at least from the perspective of the military or Department of Defense and Intelligence. Many black projects might span years or even decades and would surpass multiple presidents at any given time, so the theory of MJ-12 would make theoretical sense, although it is entirely undemocratic. So whilst I can understand the thought process around its inception, the very existence of such a cabal would entirely undermine the entire US democratic system. We know these black projects exist. We know these highly secretive programs are devoid of legal oversight and controlled by a secret shadowy group of men who may or may not have the best interests of the United States or the wider world at heart. The military-industrial complex shows us that their goal is to weaponize and militarize. Hell, the entire US economy was founded and certainly boosted by war. Is this the best use of secrets, tech, and knowledge that is above our understanding and outside of our point of evolution? Are there men among us who know why we are visited by beings from another place? What their purpose is? Why isn't this shared? MJ-12 was created in the late 1940s, and all the men who were involved have now passed away. As a side note, the MJ-12 documents interestingly leaked the year following the deaths of the last remaining members of the group. Might just be a coincidence though, right? That ultimately and finally poses the question of who took their place in this powerful position? Could it be the Gang of Eight?
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. Visit deathcult.com for more information on how you can help us and support our broadcasts. There you can also find links to our socials, Patreon, and episodes. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.